the hay race, Bruce.
Howdy, Benjamin.
Get the hay, Chief Woodenhead.
Yo, welcome to the show, MacNez Podcast, episode 84. Finally starting my Halloween Havoc type shows or whatever I want to call them. But Mike's with me this episode, and we're going to talk about Creepshow 2. It's one of our favorite movies. So here we go. Let's get this going.
Maybe you don't get out much.
Oh, this is crazy.
Come on, it's not so bad once you're in.
Or maybe you just have other things on your mind. But few like movies that will keep you stuck to your chair. Stephen King and George Romero have conjured up an all-new Creepshow just for you. Creepshow 2.
I mean, what is it?
I'm gonna swim for it right now.
So don't just sit there. Walk.
One more step and blam!
Run.
It's impossible!
Swim if you have to.
I got you!
But whatever you do, don't take your time. Cause the scares come twice as quickly in...
I beat you!
Creepshow 2.
Hey guys, like I said, Mike is back once again. I don't even know how many times he's been on the show, but we're going to be covering, like I said, yeah, like I also said, we're going to be covering Creepshow 2, came out in 1987. But before we get into that, man, what's up, dude?
Not a whole heck of a lot, just, oh my God, just getting ready for Indigenous Comic-Con with the smudging and... sending out a bunch of social media stuff today and just getting things ready and tight and, you know, travel arrangements and all that kind of good stuff, man. So yeah, that's all it's been on my agenda.
Sweet. Sweet. Yeah. We'll be down in Albuquerque in November. Still got a lot of stuff that we need to do to straighten out before we get down there for you guys. So all you people in the Albuquerque area, please come out and say what's up. Kick it with us, take us out to eat, buy us drinks. No alcohol for this guy, but
nope.
If you have any Sierra Nevada down there, I'll have one. That's my limit. But, other than that, man, we're just doing my Halloween stuff for October. Like I said, we're just gonna be doing horror movies all this month. Big Jesse is gonna come on. Mike's gonna be here. He'll probably be on here a few times with me because there's some stuff that I want to do. And Mike was with me when I seen some of these movies. I won't tell you what they are, but you'll eventually, when Mike's on, you'll know this is something that we enjoyed together as kids. But this is one of them. I remember the first time I seen this, I think it was at Junior's house in New Mexico. They had a videotape with this recording on it. This was one of the movies they had recorded. And we watched it like every day because their cable wasn't working too good. So all we had was VCR tape. There was this movie, Mannequin, and something else. But we watched Creepshow 2 and Mannequin like over and over that whole time I was there when I was visiting. When was the first time you seen this one?
The opening weekend, 1987. And a couple high school friends and I, we went just went cruising around, and I was like, oh, dude, Creepshow 2's out. So we were like, all right, well, let's go. Scraped up our change and went and saw it and just, oh, my God, dude, just laughed the whole time. I mean, I went in expecting, you know, the same formula as the first one. But it was I felt a little shortchanged because it was like the three stories and the one wraparound story. Because I wanted more, you know, and you know, just got what it was, and it was enjoyable. You know, it was a 1987, 1980s era horror movie, so you can't complain too much.
Yeah, man, this was a good one. I remember when it came out. I don't know why I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it on its cable run. Well, it was recorded from cable. I watched it over and over, but I remember the first time seeing this, I was like, yeah, I felt the same thing. Like I was shortchanged. Only three stories this time, but they were good stories. I liked them. Remember the first time I was like, oh, that's okay. But watching it over and over that summer, by the end of the summer, the time I was spending a few weeks at my uncle's house, I love this movie. And I didn't just pick it up, but it finally hit Blu-ray. Arrow Video put it out. Christmas. Marky bought it for me. I think there was a first go around Blu-ray, but I never picked that up. I just kind of got into Arrow Video, and this is probably one of the first ones that I got. But
yeah, I got the I just picked up the first run copy at Amoeba out here on Sunset in LA, and it was $7.99. So it's good quality. I mean, I haven't seen the Arrow Video quality one, but it is decent. You know, it's watchable. And so, oh, just real quick footnote, any horror fans out there, if you see this reissue of Night of the Living Dead just came out today on Blu-ray, don't get it. Don't get it. Get the one from the UK, because this one says it's all remastered and it's not. It's shit. It's dark. It's poppy. It sucks. Don't get this one. Don't get this one. All right. Back to Creepshow.
Oh, good, man, because I almost bought it.
Yeah, don't. Don't. It was – I put it in. You know, remember – sorry, just quick footnote, Night of the Living Dead here. George Romero, you know, he's still in our hearts. Remember that VHS I had with the drawing of the girl on the front and how crisp it was? Like, yeah. I thought it was going to be like that, because they're like, first time in America on Blu-ray, digitally remastered sound. Dude, no. It was from like, it looked like it was recorded on Channel 20, like at midnight, the one we used to watch, or it was all like washed out and you know, like cigarette burns on the tape. Yeah, dude, no. This one was just, don't waste it. And that's why it's only $8 on Amazon. Dude, it ain't even worth 8 cents. Get the one from the UK with the green cover with the 18 stamp on the side. That's the one to get. So, yeah.
All right, cool. Because I was waiting for this new one to come out. And apparently, it's no. Who put it out?
What the hell? Oh, I forgot. See, it was so memorable, I don't remember it. So. Nah, dude, it's just, and we could put one out because it's public domain. Yeah. So we, you know, MacNez Podcast could put one out. So
if you guys haven't seen that movie yet, I don't know if you can call yourself a horror fan, but if you do don't want to buy it or anything, and you are interested in seeing it, there is a really good copy on YouTube. It's crystal clear. It sounds good. It looks good. Check it out. I believe it was one of the many Blu-ray, or not Blu-ray, DVD releases. But it's one of the fair ones on there that's pretty good. I believe the colorized version is on there as well. That one, they tried to color it up. It did that movie no justice. It was horrible. But speaking of George Romero, like Mike said, he's in our hearts, all of us. He did the screenplay for this Creepshow too. And it was still Stephen King wrote all the stories, and George Romero just adapted it for the screen. This was directed by Michael Gornick. I have no idea what else he has directed.
He was a cinematographer in the first one, for the first Creepshow. Okay. So I think he stepped up to, cause I know George Romero, I think he wanted to direct this one, but then he did another. He got called. I think he did Monkey Shines instead of doing this one, something like that, if I recall. But Stephen King is in this one. He's makes a cameo in this one, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. This guy is also, he's been working with George Romero for a lot. He did Creepshow with him. He did Knight Riders and Dawn of the Dead. He's also helped him do stuff with that, as well as some other movie called, geez, I can't even pronounce this. It's W-A-M-P-Y-R. Martin, basically.
Oh, but, that's just like vampire, like vampire. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's done a lot with George. Again, rest in peace. But this movie, I loved it. I mean, if you've seen Creepshow, it's pretty much basically the same thing. There's always a wraparound story. But I was kind of pissed that instead of using live action like they did with the first one, they went the animated route. But it started off beginning with live actors. We had this young kid sitting there. Waiting at a newsstand, and he wanted the first copy of the new issue of Creepshow. I did like this because there was a character. What did they call him?
The creep.
I guess, yeah, he was the actual live creep in the beginning, and that was played by Tom Savini. And the voice was done by Joe Silver. That was when, once it turned into the animated stuff, they just show the creep really quick, throw out the new stack of Creepshow books. And then when the kid picks it up, he looks up at the creep, and then it just slowly turns into animated stuff. And then we get the whole Creepshow 2 logo and all this. And then the creep, Joe Silver, doing the voice for the animated version. And he starts just talking about the three stories that we're getting into. And the first story was Old Chief Woodenhead. This was just a story of old elderly couple that owned the local trading post. I believe this was somewhere back east where all Stephen King's stuff takes place. But this one was, I think it was in I believe it was like a southwestern town. It was called Dead River. And right in front of the old store, I mean, a lot of these old store types have that. The traditional cigar store Indian standing out in front, and that was your main character in this Old Chief Woodenhead. And the two are in there doing what they're doing, and elderly native, I believe he was the chief of the tribe, or maybe the tribal chairman. He was Ben White Moon, played by Frank Salcedo. Yeah, I believe he was a real native. So, but he's this town is, you can slowly see that this town is slowly falling apart. All the businesses are closing down. He's these two that are owning the store is probably one of the last people to stick around in town, because from what I understand, they built a new highway the old highway used to go through that town, and it got a lot of business. But once they built a new freeway, it kind of just turning this little town into a ghost town. So we get the tribal elder. He comes up with a bag of turquoise, and he knows that this is pretty much all that the tribe has. It's all priceless stuff that they own. And what he's doing there is he wants to give it to the two elderly people that own the store. And he's telling them that, I know my people owe you all kinds of money, but we want to give you this. It's worth maybe triple of what the people owe. And when we get our money, we'll pay you back. So he doesn't really want to take it. But he's like, no, you have to take it. So like, all right, I'll take it and I'll hold it on for you guys. He said he's just going to guard it with his life. And then the native guy leaves, and he looks up at Old Chief Woodenhead. But right when he first gets there, he kind of gives him what did he say to him? Do you remember? He said something.
He says, "Yatta hey, Chief Woodenhead." Yatta hey. And then what he gives him, that bag of jewels, is the Aline Chumichimba. That's what he says. So yeah, and then when he leaves, he says "Hakoane," which is you know, from the Navajos are Hagunit, but then he's like Hakonit. So, and then Chief Woodenhead moves. He like does a little facial expression.
Yeah. So the elderly guy, he realizes something going on. He's got this like shocked look in his eye, but nothing to be like, oh shit, I'm scared. Let me get the hell out of here. But no, he realized that old Chief Woodenhead he's a protector. He's a warrior to protect the it was Ray and Martha Spruce, played by George Kennedy and the hell was his wife's name?
Dorothy L'Amour.
Yeah. So
her last film appearance.
Yeah, this was her last movie. So he leaves. They're getting ready to close up the store. And we get three local toughs, and one of them, their leader is Sam Whitemoon. He's played by Frank. Oh no! Holt
McCallany. Holt McCallany.
McCallany. Yeah. He's air quotes the native in this. He's actually white. I mean, you've seen him in a ton of other movies. I remember he was in Fight Club and some other things, but. They darkened him up and they put like they must have found the crappiest wig to put on him. It's just straight black hair. No natives that I know of have jet black hair.
So. If there are any old 1960s original Planet of the Apes fans out there that love the 1960 movies. His wig basically looks like Nova's hair.
Yeah.
From Beneath the Planet of the Apes. So it was back in the day before they really like made wigs state of the art. It just kind of like poofed out and down. So yeah, it's clearly like, yeah, I've never seen hair like that on any native.
But I mean, it's hilarious, but I let it pass just because I guess they couldn't find any native actors with straight long hair in 87. But another
Billy Jack was too old.
Yeah, and Ajax wasn't available. Oh, the hell's it? James Remar. If you've seen Walter Hill's The Long Riders, he was Sam Starr in that, and he was also
Sam Starr.
James Remar was also Wind Walker in that one movie, Wind Walker.
So, God, dude,
I let James Remar. He gets the pass because he's badass.
No, did you just some real quick trivia on James Remar? You know he was originally cast as Hicks in Aliens.
Yeah, I think they did some filming with him.
Yeah, but James Cameron found out that I guess they said he was like, he was a druggie. Like he was reported on set, he was high and stuff. So James Cameron fired him. So yeah, there's the scenes where they're in the atmosphere processing station and you see the back of Hicks. That's actually James Remar.
Oh, dude, I'll have to check that out.
Would have been cool. I mean, Michael Biehn, props, you're always a Cameron favorite, but it would have been interesting to see James Remar in Aliens. But yeah, man. So the other actor was David Holbrook, who plays Fat Stuff, and he's actually David Holbrook's actually the son of Hal Holbrook, who was in the original Creepshow in the story The Crate. He played Henry, the wife of Adrian Barbeau's character, the husband of Adrian Barbeau's character. Yeah. So, and then the other guy is played by Don Harvey, who's been in other character actor in Die Hard 2. His famous line in that is, no pictures, you pinko bitch. He was in bit part in The Relic, Casualties of War. So, yeah.
That's what I liked him in. I was about to say that one. Casualties of War. Good movie. If you guys haven't seen that, Michael J. Fox.
And brutal Vietnam movie by Brian De Palma.
Yep. So we get them three. They come in and they're basically, they're going to rob the store. Sam, is that his name?
Yeah. Yeah, Sam White Moon.
Yeah. He knows that his uncle dropped off all the, he called it rock candy. Is that what he called it?
Yeah.
They dropped off all that turquoise stuff, and they realized it was so valuable. What's his face? Ben, was that his name?
Which one?
I forgot. George Kennedy. Ray.
Ray.
Ray realizes that, hey, you can't take this. This is your people's stuff. And he's like, nope, they want to use it because they need the money to get to Hollywood because Sam wants to be a movie star. And
that hair is going to get him paid and laid.
Yeah, he's going out there and he's going to go back to, he's going down to Hollywood and take his land back one white girl at a time.
Yep.
he didn't say that, but that's what he was saying in it. But anyway, so.
My favorite line is when he goes, this hair is the ticket to Hollywood. I ain't just fucking around here. That's what I said when I moved out here from Chicago. I ain't just fucking around here.
So there's a struggle. And then Martha Spruce. No, that's not her name, but that's her real name. Yeah, Martha. She actually gets shot with a shotgun, and she gets killed. And that was pretty much point blank, almost, man. But it just looked like it just did one little bullet hole, man. Getting hit with a shotgun that close, that would have blew her stomach apart. But anyway, so she goes down. George Kennedy, Ray, he comes out, he ends up getting shot, and they're basically like, oh man, we need to get the hell out of here. But the plan was that they weren't supposed to go in there and kill him. They were just going to rob him and get the hell out of Dodge. So they're like, well, they know what we can do now. Let's get out of here. So they basically come up with the plan. Hey, we're going to go home, pick up some stuff, and we're getting the hell out of here. So all of them go back to their houses. They just leave the Spruce couple laying there. And when they all jet, this is when the camera goes outside and you see old Chief Woodenhead, and he like comes to life. He realizes that his protectors, or he was the protector actually, his people that loved him and that were taking care of him, he kind of just starts to move and comes to life. I like that, but the effects, it totally looked like somebody wearing a rubber suit when he's moving around.
Yeah, that was early makeup by Howard Berger of the famous K&B effects group. And he's the one that designed the makeup for him. And if you see it, yeah, it's a guy wearing a suit, but just the texture of how it looks wooden is impressive. And if there's any fans out there of the Wishmaster movies, in the first Wishmaster movie, when Robert Englund is having that party and all his statues come to life, there's a bronze one, a marble one, just one made of stone. Howard Berger, along with Gary, what's his name? Guys in the crew, they designed the texturing on those actors looks really cool. So when you see them moving, it really looks like, you know, that like it's a statue moving. So he's the one makeup artist behind that. Greg Nicotero.
Yeah.
That's the end. Greg Nicotero, who also directs episodes of The Walking Dead and does effects for him too.
And he's the executive producer for Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah,
numerous other things, but old Chief Woodenhead. He was once it starts moving around. Dan Kamen was the actor that played him. I liked what when he comes to life and he realized that in the beginning, Ray Spruce was doing the touch up on old Chief Woodenhead's war paint. He was painting it over just because the sitting outside the elements. Or just kind of wearing out the paint on his face. So he was repainting that. But this part was cool. I liked how Chief Woodhead like just dipped his hand in the paint. It was red paint, and it just gave him his little red war paint on the side of his face. And then he lets out this big howl. Kind of sounded like a werewolf or a wolf or something. So I thought that was badass. And then old Chief Woodhead goes out on the war path to go get the three guys that murdered his the spruce couple. I like this one. Which one was your favorite kill?
Oh God, I liked even though you didn't see it, I liked how he got Sam. But the one that made me laugh was when he killed Fat Stuff. He shot him through his beer can. He's still sitting there holding his beer.
Yeah, he was. Once they start killing him, he's just sitting there in his trailer with the door wide open, watching TV, and he's just sitting there waiting up, and then you just see this arrow go straight into his chest through his beer can. So he goes down. We go to Andy Kavanaugh's house. He's the guy. He's the rich kid of the bunch.
Rich boy.
Yeah, Fat Stuff was just one of their buddies. Lived in a trailer. Sam lived out on the res, and Andy was the rich boy of the group, because you go, they show his house, and it's a nice house, and he's got both of his parents live there, and he's in the. I think this one was my favorite kill. They show it, but you just see a shadow. He starts to hear stuff in the garage, so when he goes in there, he finds that his car, I believe it was a Firebird or something, or 28 or something.
No, the Firebird. You know what his dad bought him? A fucking Firebird.
Oh, yeah. So he goes in there, and his car is trashed. And it was a nice 80s Firebird, if you guys remember those cars. I've always wanted one. I've never got one, but it's all trashed. And he's like looking at it like, oh, fuck. And then you just see the shadow of him looking at his car. And you see the shadow of Chief Woodhead coming up behind him. Andy turns around real quick, and then he just gets like a tomahawk to the head. So he's ass out. We go to Sam's house, and then, oh, fuck, man, I can't remember. How did he get it?
Chief Woodhead pulled him through the wall and then scalped him.
That's right.
Cut off all his beautiful hair.
It kind of like just, it was chasing around the house, and then, yeah, came through the wall and it got him. And then
cut his hair off with a dull wooden knife. However the hell that happens.
Yeah. So we go back. It's the next day. We go back to the store. I mean, after all this, when you hear that loud war cry again, and then we go back to the store, and Ben White.
Wait, First, the chief, he wakes up like it was a bad dream, and then he has that bag of jewels under his hand when he wakes up.
Well, that's right, because he heard the war cry, and that's when I think that's what woke him up. So the next day, Ben goes to the store, and he realized something's going on, but he sees old Chief Woodhead standing in front of the store. And did he have Sam's hair, his scalp?
Yeah, he had his scalp in his hand.
Yeah, so Ben White Moon knew what happened, and he just kind of looked at him, gave him the Yatahe or whatever, Hagonet salute, and then he rides off into the sunset. And so that's the end of the first story. And then we get the wraparound starts to continue. We see that the kid, Billy, I believe, was his name. He's reading the comic book, and he gets to he starts to get chased by a little bully gang that's led by some fat kid.
Wait, first he's at the post office. Remember, he's getting that. Oh. He's getting a package of Venus flytrap.
Yeah, he ordered something from the comic book. So.
Yeah, then those kids start to chase him.
Yeah, they end up chasing him, and then we get to the next tale, which, man, I love old Chief Woodenhead, but I think the Raft is my, this next story, the Raft is my favorite one.
Out of all three of them?
Yeah, it looks cheesy, but I think this is my favorite one.
It had the best music in it. When I was watching it, I was listening to the score, and I was like, this music in this story is like, it's really good. This story is actually from, it's one of Stephen King's in one of his, in this book, Skeleton Crew. This story, The Raft, is in there. Old Chief Woodenhead, and then the third one, those are written for the screen. But this one was from his book, Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, I love this one. This one is just four college students. No idea. Somewhere back east. It's hot day, and they all want to go swimming. So they end up pulling up to this little lake. It kind of looked like a little pond, actually.
It's in Arizona.
Oh, that's right, it was, huh?
Yeah.
So they pull up to there, and they're all ready to party, smoking weed, drinking. And they all, let's go swimming, and they all go jumping in the water, and they swim out to, there's one of those floating rafts out in the middle of the lake. But before they do that, one of the guys, I can't remember his name.
Andy.
Yeah, he actually sees something in the water because he sees a duck, like, kind of flapping around. He doesn't realize, knows what's going on, then all of a sudden it kind of disappears, but. So they all go jumping in. They all swim out to the raft, and they're having a good time. And then they notice something isn't right, because there's something coming towards them. And it just looks like a big old glop of
something. Like an oil slick.
Yeah. But when you look at it, I mean, I know the effects were 1987, but to me, it looked like they had a bunch of old black Glad trash bags put to get taped together and just threw some gunk on top of it, because it's almost kind of like a circle, and it's slowly moving across the top of the water towards them. They have no idea what it is, and it kind of like starts to circle them around the raft, and they're like, well, what are we gonna do? And they're like, well, we can just swim for it, but that ain't happening. Who gets it first? I can't remember. Was it one of the girls, or was it the?
Yeah, it was
tough guy.
No, it was one of the girls. What was her name? Rachel. Yeah, she was sitting there, and she was like mesmerized by it. She was watching it. It was sitting next to the raft, and she started touching it with her finger, and then it globbed up. It like jumped up and it got around the arm. And I guess like it was, well, in the book too, it was kind of like once it got on you, it started eating your flesh like acid. It started to eat through your flesh, and that's what it was doing to her arm. And then it pulled her in. And then the other two, Deke was the football player, and his girlfriend, they thought she fell in. They were both high. And then they were all making jokes about it. But then like, she surfaced, and she was covered in that gunk, and she was yelling, "It hurts." She's like, "It hurts, it hurts." And then she finally went down.
So I mean, they're like, kind of just like, man, what the hell are we going to do? And Deke's like, man, I can outswim it. But then it goes under the raft and just goes through. I think this is my favorite kill in this one. It goes through the woods, or through the wood, the 2x4s or whatever, and it grabs Deke by the leg and just slowly pulls him down into a hole in the raft. And I like this one because his leg like basically just folds, and he goes down into it, and the big goop or whatever the hell, Glad trash bags get him. If you've seen this, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. That's how it looked to me. I mean, that's what I thought even the very first time.
In the book, in the short story, it didn't pull him through a hole like in the book. It like this big old hole, you know, break one of the planks break underneath him, creating this hole, and then he gets sucked through. in the book, he actually gets pulled in between the wood. It's in between like a 2-inch crack. A human body, he gets pulled through that. So they're sitting there watching for hours as his body is being squeezed, bones and all, through this, through the crack in the raft. And like in the movie, the last image of him is his hands, his fingers slipping through the wood, and then his college ring, you know, it stays there. And that's the part in the book too, that was the last thing to go, was like, I just remember one of the descriptions in the book was like, he, you know, he, all his, everything, his organs and his ribs, everything's being pushed up to like his chest, and they're both sitting there watching. And I remember like, he, with enough, I don't know, the human body does weird shit when it's dying, but Randy said, he goes, Deke looked over at him and like opened his mouth, and he thought he was going to say something, and then all his entrails and everything shot out of his mouth and hit him. Oh, and then it, yeah, it's Stephen King, man. leaves nothing to the imagination. So yeah. But this story is, it's pretty suspenseful, because then you get the last two people, Randy and that other girl, I think her name is Lorraine. Laverne. Yeah, I remember he's like, shut up, Laverne. If you don't stop, I'm going to smoke you, I swear. Yeah, so it moves out. The Glad trash bags move out from under the raft, and they're sitting there, and they have to stay up all night. But then in the morning, he wakes up, and Randy's getting his little – trying to get his little – is on by, you know, messing with her while she's still half asleep. And this was, I like this kill. So when she's laying there, you know, he's like starting to pleasure her. And then her face is on the cracks of that raft. And then she's like moaning, like she's having a good time. And then she turns over and like all that crap's on the side of her face, and her face is like eaten away. And then it just finally takes her and drags her in, and homeboy's like, all right, fuck it, it's eating her, I'm out. Jumps off the raft and swims, and it's chasing him. And I remember the whole theater, our theater, when I saw it, they were like, oh, dude, hurry, go. You're all cheering him on. And he finally gets to the shore, and that stuff stops at the water, and he's like, I beat you. And then, boom, comes out of the water like a big blanket. And then everybody's like, "Ah, oh, wake!" And then the next scene, it's like, you could see his lump underneath, and it goes back in the water. Yeah, so I just remember that. I beat you. And then it came out. I remember there's these two black guys sitting next to us. They're like, "Oh man, what the? Dude, that's no, hell no. He should have got up and ran."
I thought that too, man. He got to shore, man. You would get a safe distance, because you never know. But if he thought that was it, it just like this big, huge, just yeah, came over and got him and pulled him in. After he gets sucked back in the big trash bag, start floating away. the camera pulls back, and there's a sign covered by these bushes, and it says. It say no swimming or
no swimming. Yeah, no swimming. I will say this, man. As many movies as we saw, which we'll probably talk about later in the month, if any fans out there are familiar with or from the great city of Oakland, and y'all know the area around East 19th and Park Boulevard, you know about the Parkway Theater, the legendary Parkway Theater. Like me and Nez, man, we've seen legions of movies there. And I will tell you, some of the best experiences we've had are listening to the brothers in the theater just make jokes during the movie. And I remember it was one of the, I think it was, were you with me when we went and saw Scream? I think, I don't know if you were with me, but I remember that, you know, any fans of Scream and any Happy Days fans know that Henry Winkler, the Fonz, is in the first Scream. And I remember sitting there and, these three black dudes sitting in front of us, and one dude goes, "Hey, blood, if they kill the Fonz, man, I'm out of here, man. They can't fucking kill the Fonz, man. Fuck that." As soon as Fonz got it, he got up and walked out. His friends were like, "Blood, where you going?" He never came back either. I couldn't stop laughing. As soon as Fonz gets it, man, Fonz gets it, I'm out of here. Boom, he gets stabbed. Dude got up and left. Was it? And then you and I think, I forgot what we saw. Was it one of the Friday the 13th? But that one dude next to us kept laughing. Like, he was like laughing hysterically at everything Jason did.
Part six.
Yeah, you and I just kept looking at each other, like looking at him. He was rolling. God damn.
We're gonna talk about Parkway some more, because there's a movie that we saw there together, which we both love, and I won't tell you what that is. Well, you'll know it when we get to that movie. But this story,
I know,
man,
a movie like I said, saw there that I loved. we won't get into that. But anyway,
we already did that one.
On to the third story, which was
The Hitchhiker. Well, we get another interlude. I'm looking on Wikipedia. It says, on his way back home from the post office and reading The Raft, Billy is ambushed by a gang of neighborhood bullies who harass him and take his package away. The gang's leader, Rhino, smashes open the package, finding Vita's flytrap bulb, throws it to the ground, crushes it with his foot. In retaliation, Billy kicks Rhino in the groin and he flees. With Rhino and his gang in hot pursuit, the creep appears to present the next terror or next tale. And this is...
Rhino. Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Rhino's line. What are you going to do? Grow more pansies like yourself? I don't know why that kid talked like that. He was supposed to be like 10, and he was like, he had muscles. But yeah. So we get to the third story, which is...
Well, whoever did the artwork for the animated artwork for all that, I mean, I love just how it looked. It reminded me of the animated stuff from Heavy Metal. I like that.
Yeah, it was... I don't know. It was the same, like... It looked kind of like that that old school... what's that? Ralph Bakshi. Look like old school Ralph, like if you're familiar with Wizards or the animated Lord of the Rings. It was that kind of animation, kind of not really rotoscope, but it was traditional. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was like, if any fans out there of old school Christmas cartoons, like if you've seen the animated Christmas Carol, it was like that kind of animation. So,
yeah, I mean, I always liked that kind of stuff. I mean, if you haven't seen Heavy Metal, the original one, not the whatever the second Heavy Metal one was. I didn't like that one at all. That one was good. Check it out. Now we come to the final tale, and this is The Hitchhiker. This story is just basically a lady. She's played by Anne Langston. Oh, no. That's the character's name. Her name is Anne Langston. And this is portrayed by...
Lois Childs.
Yeah, she is... Actually, the first movie I seen her in was Moonraker, James Bond, the real James Bond, Roger Moore. That's the first time I had seen her. But she, in this story, she's just she's getting her yeah on with some dude, and basically he was a not a call girl, but a call guy, a gigolo.
Gigolo.
Yep. So he's done beating it up, and she's getting did she have a pager or something, or did she call her house and listen to voice messages? I can't remember.
No, she just looked at the clock and was like, it was like almost 1 a.m. and I guess her husband keeps her in check, and she's like, I was supposed to be home by 11:30, so you know, I got to get home. And they have this little conversation, and yeah, she ends up getting in her Mercedes and heads home. Yep. Late at night.
Yep. So she's smashing her way home. She's not really paying attention to the road, and she runs over this old homeless guy on the side of the road, holding up a sign. And that was it was a black gentleman. He was also in What's that anthology one?
He was in Tales from the Hood.
Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, he was in Tales from the Hood. He was in Mark Fidesa. Old actor slash stuntman named Tom Wright. Yeah. The legendary Tom Wright, because he's one of the first like notable African-American actors that stuntman. And if you remember Steven Seagal's Marked for Death, where he goes up against the Jamaicans, Tom Wright played the undercover agent that was helping him out. So, but yeah, in Tales from the Hood, he played that politician guy, kind of like a Jesse Jackson type guy that's murdered by spoiler alert, that's murdered by those four cops, those four white cops in L.A.
By Ramrod.
Yeah. The legendary Wings Hauser.
Yeah. What was that movie? Vice Squad?
Vice Squad, man. If no one's ever seen it, it's I will say this. It's worth the $200 that it's on eBay on DVD. It's worth it. I don't know why I sold mine, but I should have kept it. But yeah, man, Vice Squad. If you ever, cult classic film.
Yeah, it's an awesome movie. I love it. I've seen it once. I think the only time I saw it was when you and Jamie kept talking about it. And then it came on late at night on HBO or one of those channels. And I remember sitting there watching it.
Yeah, he cut off reruns balls in that movie. Right. Fred Berry lost his berries.
Yeah. Frederick Stubbs. Yeah. AKA Rerun for you What's Happening fans. But anyway, so she's not paying attention. She runs over this black homeless gentleman on the side of the road. And when she hits him, she's like, no one's around. So she's like, well, I ain't got time for this. Fuck this. I'm out. So she just hurries it out of there. But as she's hauling ass away, we get this truck driver coming around the corner, and it's actually Stephen King. He's his cameo in this was he was a truck driver. So he kind of okay, well, I saw this car speeding around the corner, and that's pretty much it. So she starts to haul ass, and when she's driving down the road, she sees the hitchhiker again, like really quick, and she's like, oh, what the fuck is that? And he's like all bloody on the side of the road. So did she stop? I can't remember.
Yeah, she passes by him in a really cool like cinematography, because you're following her, but then you can see him in his yellow raincoat outside of the window, and then she slams on the brakes and looks in the rearview mirror, and he's running after her. Like, he's hobbling up the road all nasty looking because she ran him over. But he starts to come after her, and then she like wipes her eyes and then looks, and he's gone. And then she looks over out of her driver's side window, and he's standing right there, and he's all, hey lady, thanks for the ride. And then she speeds off.
Yeah, so pretty much the rest of this tale is her just trying to get away from this hitchhiker, and she keeps running into him. And his catchphrase is, thanks for the ride, lady. I mean, that's all he says to her. And, yeah. And each time she runs him over and hits him and all this, and he just gets more bloodier and more banged up. So he's pretty much, you just see her doing that pretty much through the whole story. And on his sign that he had when she eventually sees it, it says, you killed me on it. And then she just all fucking freaked out. And by the time she gets home, her Mercedes is just trashed. But she's just, I think she's at the point of losing it, where she's just, I just got in an accident. I'm home now. She was trying to get home before her husband got home. And then she pulls into the garage, parks the car. And then when she gets out, you guessed it, the hitchhiker is there. And he's all just pretty much mangled up and bloody and everything. Thanks for the ride, lady.
He's got no face.
Because she ran him over. I don't know how many times her whole ride home, and she's like hauling ass on the highway and just drifting around the corners and everything. And yeah, she finally gets it when she gets home. So, I remember her, when her husband finds her, Isn't she in the car and the car's running?
Yeah, she's in the car. Dead, like, yeah, she has that sign on her. It says, I think it says Boston or something. And that guy's sign that he was holding.
Yeah,
it's around her neck.
I believe it said Dover, so wherever he was going.
Dover.
Yeah, so she's sitting there. The car's running. The husband just thinks it's carbon monoxide poisoning. So, yeah, that's the end of that story. That was the final story in this movie. But when we get to the epilogue of the wraparound story, Billy's finally, he got chased into some little, it looked like kind of like in the woods. And then when the rhino and his gang corner Billy.
Rhino.
Billy kind of summons the Venus flytrap, and it turns out that this is his little garden of Venus flytraps, and they're like huge, because he's like telling Rhino, "Do you know what they eat?" And he goes, "What did they say? Like meat or flesh?" Or something?
They eat meat.
So they come to life, and they end up eating up Rhino and all the bullies. I liked how Rhino, man, he went out like a champ, man. He was inside the Venus flytrap's mouth. It was a big giant one, and he's like holding the mouth open so it wouldn't shut, but he wasn't strong enough, and he ends up getting
Yeah, kid was like 10 and he had like biceps like the Rock.
He ends up getting chewed up, and that's the end of that story. But we go back to the creeper. It turns into live action, and we see Billy again on his bike, and then we see the creep. He's just driving away in the truck, and he's throwing, I believe, Creepshow magazines out of the back of the truck. You just see him driving down the road, and that's pretty much the end of your movie. And this movie was awesome. I loved it, but yeah, we did feel shortchanged. It was only three stories, but. These three stories were awesome, and like I said, The Raft was probably my favorite. But this is a timeless classic. I believe it is streaming on YouTube. YouTube didn't put it up. Somebody put it up. It's on there, and because I don't think it's streaming anywhere else, but I'm sure it is. If you search the high seas, you'll find it. But
it was on Hulu for a minute. It's gone, but it is on YouTube, and it's a pretty good copy. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, this is an awesome movie. If you guys have seen it, the first one's the best one. Second one's just it's good, not as good, but it's still good. Did you ever catch the third one?
Nope. I heard it was shit.
I couldn't finish it. I couldn't even tell you. I saw one story, and I couldn't even tell you what that story was. It was just like. They took the idea, it's an anthology, and they just took the name Creepshow, and it was horrible. So,
yeah, like Jeepers Crappers 3.
Oh, God. I already went into that. And if you guys listen to the East Society, I pretty much spoiled the whole movie.
God, dude. Oh, God. I shit.
If you guys want to hear my review on that, go to last East Society, not the newest episode that's about to come out, the last one. I don't even know when I'm putting this out yet, but it'll probably be after or before that. But anyway, yeah, man, that's Creepshow 2. And hey, Mike, man, thanks for coming on and helping me out with this one. And got anything else to say?
Oh, my God. Today or yesterday, past couple of days, full of all kind of tragedy. Past Jesus, this whole month, you know, last month, you know, Nez and I always we're humanitarians, man. We always try to look out our best for fellow people, because you know we like people, and just like stuff that happened with the hurricanes, the loss of life, and then. Las Vegas, man, because I know you visit Vegas a lot and you have fun there. And then for something like this to happen, it's fucked up. Like, it's beyond fucked up. Hearts and prayers go out to the families and the wounded, you know, all the time. It just it sucks. And then big, huge Big, huge thanks to Mr. Tom Petty, who passed away yesterday, confirmed. Surrounded by family and friends out here at UCLA Medical Center. Succumbed to cardiac arrest, but man, no, there'll never be another. One of the very few artists, musicians of our time that there'll never be another. And Tom Petty, God, man, just entertain them up there. You know, you and all the other ones just, you know, this one really hit me because, like, the song Won't Back Down, that's my theme song. Anybody that knows me knows that's my song. And just hearing that he passed away is just unbelievable. So thank you, Tom Petty, and, you know, hearts and prayers to everybody. The tragedy of Las Vegas. President Trump, you still suck like a big fat one. Fuck you. Hate you, sucker. But everybody out there, man, we're never promised tomorrow. So just do what you got to do today. Let everybody know you love them and just be safe when you go out. Just remember that, you know, just be safe. God damn, just be safe. So, yeah, that's just my two cents on things happening.
Yep. Then I already did my little speech on this on Ace Society. But, yeah, my heart goes out to the families of everyone it affected in Las Vegas with this tragic event. And, yeah, Tom Petty, you're going to be missed. My heart goes out to you and your family. But he left us with a lot of great music. And I've said this before, Tom Petty is one of the reasons that I play music. And, pray for everybody that got affected in Vegas and all the tragic events that's happened so far this year, being Texas and Florida, Puerto Rico and Mexico. With the earthquake down there and everything, and just I keep saying this, man. We all need to live together. We all need to come together as one. We all need to get on the same page. I know that's easier said than done, but but like I always say, man, just go out there, live your dreams, rock hard, and skate fast.